You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. I'm Logan Medish of High Caliber History, your host. And as always, I'm joined around the table by a colorful cast of characters. Of course, we have Alan from Gunbroker. We have Dan from Go Wild. And our guest today is Perry Yee. Perry, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, Perry, you have led an interesting life. You have an interesting background.
Some would say.
Yeah. I think more than some, you know. So give us a little bit of insight into your world.
All right. So, yeah, real quick, upbringing. I'm from the East Coast. So I grew up in New Hampshire, and not like a stellar student or athlete or anything, but I ended up joining the military back in 2005. Okay. So when I went in, I honestly had no idea what I wanted to do. So went to all the branches, figured out what everyone had to offer, and was like, I just want something hard. And, you know, came to the Navy recruiters, and so they're talking about BUDS and the SEAL teams. And, you know, back then, they weren't as all in the spotlight as they are today. Mm-hmm. So
sure.
I really didn't know what I was getting into. So yeah, I ended up enlisting, going into the Navy January 05, and had a couple years with, like, boot camp and getting my rate for the Navy, and then ended up going to BUDS. And started with one class. I had two medical roles, both within Hell Week. So I've done three classes, three Hell Weeks, and finally graduated with class 262.
I mean, if it's worth doing once, yeah, do it three times.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, G.I. Jane was a very inspiring class. So, you know, to be more could do it, I can do it. Once I graduated, ended up going to SEAL Team 7, which is a West Coast team in Coronado, California, in San Diego. And so I did 4 years in the teams, served during Operation Enduring Freedom, in Afghanistan back in 2009. And that's my one claim to fame was my one combat tour in 2009. But it was very good work, you know, a lot of stuff that I was proud of. And then
now you fight giant robots.
Right. That was interesting. I'm sure we'll get into that. Yeah.
That's what we call in the business, a teaser.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But you brought up an interesting thing that I want to touch on. You know, you said when you joined the SEALs, you know, it was obviously pre-2011, you know. So now when anyone says Navy SEAL, like, everyone knows right. Navy right. SEAL. Like, that just clicks with yeah. everybody. But 2005, it's a different world, right? And so we'd like to get, you know, kind of your perspective on what has it been like, you know, as a SEAL, you know, seeing the progression of how people receive and perceive, you know, Navy SEALs.
Yeah, I mean, it's It's a tough discussion because, you know, if you really ask anybody from the SEAL teams, they're going to say, you know, the same thing. It's very over-glorified, mm-hmm. you know. There was a time when you had that silent professional title attached to it, but in this case now, it's different. You know, there's still a lot of good guys that have gotten out of the teams and that, you know, use their background to you know, further their careers and do a lot of good things outside. And I think that's the difference, is the generational difference is my generation. I don't know many people that actually stayed in to retirement. A lot of guys, you know, okay. they get in, they get some experience, they, you know, do a lot of good work, but can, you know, benefit elsewhere. So, yeah, it's tough to see it everywhere because, again, it's a very over-glorified community, and, you know, we're just regular dudes.
It is a very diverse group, right? Too. Yeah, you know, because before, I mean, even before 05, kind of the only real public face of the teams was Dick Marcinko.
Yeah.
And then now you've got, I mean, between Chris Kyle, Jack Carr, the television show.
Right.
You know, it seems like it's almost gone back to anonymous because there's so much of it out there. People don't even really necessarily identify as individuals anymore.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think at first it was a little exciting where it's like, wow, like more people are knowing about the community, about what we do, what we stand for, and, you know, your everyday American is like, wow, it's really cool. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, I think for me personally, it's getting to a point where it's just so oversaturated now, and it's like, oh, here's another SEAL movie, or, you know, here's another TV show. I've never watched an episode of SEAL Teams. I've never seen it. But, yeah, I think it might be coming backwards where it was so mm-hmm. over, you know, exaggerated uh-huh. to the yeah. point where now it's like, oh, okay, whatever. It's another Navy SEAL, you know, it's kind of right. like a dime a dozen.
Yeah, I feel like it kind of used to be like only few people can be a SEAL. You're not cut out for it, whatever. And now so much of the messaging is you can take these SEAL practices, mentalities, into your daily life, into right, your workplace. Yeah. So it used to be kind of like this elitist, like, don't even consider yourself in the same realm, where now all these public personas are saying, no, you can take certain aspects yeah. of the SEAL experience and adapt it to, you know,
I think
whatever.
That's what happened is, you know, guys are getting out in, you know, whatever, any type of special forces community mm-hmm. and just, you know, taking what they knew from their time and, you know, doing type of special operations stuff and like, wow, I can actually use this to my benefit in whatever business field they're going into. Because if you look at this, the leadership aspect of it, it's like there's so many takeaways. And I think exactly what you were just talking about, you know, a lot of people now are like, well, we can, you know, have this speaker go read this book and, you know, see what goes into the yeah. mindset of how they operate on, you know, such an elite level, and how do I do that in my business?
Mm-hmm. I think SEALs get a little bit of a bad rap on that, too, because it's like you said, it's the special forces community as a whole, just the mindset and the training and the discipline that go into that. It really does translate to a lot of those just personal life and business leadership goals, but there's certainly everyone from all the special branches out doing those things, but it seems like the SEALs are the ones that always stand out. You know, it's Cash yeah. Care, it's Rourke Deaver. Those are the ones that you know are out there doing those things. And yeah, there's plenty of former Delta guys and Rangers out there doing the same thing. You just don't SEAL though. Just jumps out. Such a great tag. Right. It just jumps out. Right. So it's a little bit of a bad rap.
Yeah, and yeah, it's just yeah, just yeah. You summed it up very well, Alan. You know. But so I want to go back and we talk about, you know, you talked about different generations, you know, and generational differences with the SEALs and stuff. And so if I'd like to talk a little bit on the weaponry side of, you know, what you guys were using in 05 and what you're seeing the guys having now and, you know, what kind of differences we've got between the weaponry and, you know, were there things that, you know, in 05 you're like, man, if only we had, you know, X, like what was the stuff that you wish you had then, and now you're looking at it now, and you're like, holy cow.
And now you can walk into Cabela's and pick one.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I mean, yeah, so 05 time frame, so we were, our standard issue was the M4, the Colt M4. We were still using the SIG P, the Mark 25, so the 226. And we actually when we were overseas in 09, we got one of the first batches of the SCARs. We actually got a shipment of SCAR heavies that got sent out to us while we were out there. For me, I think the biggest difference I've seen in technology, honestly, has been the night vision.
Oh, yeah.
We're still running the old, you know,
the green phosphor is insane.
I'm running a pair of white phosphors as a you know, little punk civilian, not doing anything, and it's just light years ahead of what we were using.
We've talked about it on this show before, but I was doing an event with a tactical night vision company out in the sticks of Wyoming, and they had the first couple pair of white phosphors, and a lot of the riders we brought were former special forces guys, you know, teams guys, Delta guys, Force Recon Marines, and we go out in the first night, and everyone puts the white phosphor on for the first time, and suddenly here's all these battle hardened warriors just staring at the sky, going, "Wow!"
Yeah,
it was hilarious.
What's funny is that you still meet some people that are just like, "No, like I know the green, I operated on the green, and it's like, all right, I mean, if you want the ice rain, that's on you." But it's, you know, they're so set in their ways. But yes, as far as like the weaponry goes. So I got out in 2011.
Okay.
So we're coming up on 13 years now. So I know a lot of things have changed, and you know, I'm sure some things are still quite similar, just maybe a little bit more enhanced. But I'm not even sure what they're running as far as like their primary rifle system in the teams.
Well, you know, because the popular thought had always been that, oh, well, teams guys and spec op guys in general can run whatever they want. You know, they come to, like, they go to the SHOT Show with an open checkbook and wherever they want, so they can cowboy up and wear whatever. And I mean, it's still a military operation.
Right.
There's still a logistics chain.
Right.
You know, even though the guys might not have been the biggest fan of the 226, it's not like you're like, well, today we're going to take the G19.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a logistics chain.
I've heard of some people having some small choice in their carry options, especially overseas, but you know, we were limited to whatever we had in our inventory, which
it was a good inventory.
Yeah. But at the same time, every single person had a standard issue of gear, and then depending on your specialty, right, the snipers had their sniper suite of, you know, four different rifles they were using. Your breachers might be running a shotgun, or then you had like all your grenade launchers, which we were still running the
203s?
M79, right?
Oh, the
M79.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And so, you know, we had our standard. So, I mean, it was also kind of mission dependent.
Sure.
So when we were over in Afghanistan, right, it's like, are we doing direct action stuff? Are we doing Overwatch? So then it's like, all right, am I bringing my 10-inch M4 or am I running the SCAR? You know, so
right.
It was kind of mission dependent.
What were you using for optics, ACOGs?
We had standard issue ACOGs and the LCAN, the Spectre DR. I was running that, the 1-4. I love that thing. I actually just picked one up not too long ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
I was just talking with somebody about it. They're like, how is that thing still on the market? It's ancient. I'm like, because it works?
Yeah,
if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
I love it. It's a little bulky, but and then the snipers were running the Night Force. And what else? Or EOTechs. We ran EOTechs if you didn't want to go with magnification. And I think we were running the PEC-15s as far as our lasers.
And you do close quarters combat training now, right?
Correct, yes.
Are you running red dots?
Yes, okay. I am. So I run a home defense business. So over in San Diego County, I actually travel to people's homes, teach them how to do CQB within their own, their own four walls. But it's everything from we sit and talk about, you know, legalities, what you can, can't do, and aftermath as well. You know, like no one thinks about what to do
say,
after.
What not to say, who not to call.
Exactly. Yeah. So we talk about that, and we actually, you know, we'll go over their security. We'll go over how to better, you know, fortify the outside of their house or the inside.
Lights here, take out bushes there.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. It's super simple things that people just don't think about. But and then, you know, the meat and potatoes is the actual the movement throughout the house. So a lot of it is one man CQB, which, you know, I didn't learn until after I got out of the military.
Right, so you don't do anything alone.
Right. Yeah, you don't do it. It's taboo.
Hence
right.
The teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of one person CQB, and then, you know, even we might run 2 days worth of CQB in the house, but, you know, it's like realistically your best bet might just be, you know, you gather everyone in one room, right?
Yep.
You hunker down in one room or find a choke point and you sit, one person's on the phone with law enforcement.
Sure.
And you just wait it out, you know. You want to stay alive.
So if you had two or three general tips that apply to almost everybody's house, the things you see the most common that need to be either upgraded or removed or fixed, what do you got?
All right. So if you talk about outside the house, you have, video cameras are good, but make sure they're visible. People have all these hidden cameras, right? Have cameras that are very easily visible. So if people see them, hopefully it's a good deterrent. That being said, if you can't afford a system, get a sign, right? Yeah. Get an ADT sign that you can stick in the house. Or
don't steal your neighbor's, though. Right. It doesn't work well.
You can do vegetation, right? If you can have some type of thorny bush outside a window that makes it harder to be accessible, something like that. Getting a dog is my favorite, right? But know your breed. Know what's going to be a good watchdog. And you don't need your little fur missile Mal as a protection dog.
Honestly, little mouthy yip dogs
exactly.
are great.
You just want something that's going to get your attention and alert you when someone's coming. If you can't get a dog, you can get a dog bowl and some toys outside and give the illusion that you have a dog, or a beware of dog sign. Anything that will hopefully help deter someone. But inside, you can do something as simple as, you have sliding doors and windows, putting bars in the track with the doors and windows, or you have the little the alarm systems that you can have. I don't know who makes it. There's the film you can put on your window as well.
Oh, right? Privacy film.
So it doesn't.
Well, it's not privacy, but it's shatter resistant.
Yeah, it doesn't shatter.
When we moved into our house, I hated it because the whole area all around the front door was glass, which just I'm like, that is not cool. And we found that film, put it on the inside, and now at least I know you're not going to smash that and get it to get to the doorknob. So.
And the thing is, too, if you can make your house to the point where they have to physically break something to get in, right, that's going to be your best bet. Anything that's going to get your attention, if it's in the dead of night, if they have to break a window or kick in a door, you can take stronger screws, right, to replace the screws in your door.
Those little things that
door
come
jam. And then something you could do as well is what's on your nightstand. Like, people might have their firearm, but the one easy thing is your key fob. If you can set off your car alarm, where now you're getting the attention of your neighbors, or it's just another thing that they freak out and hopefully bail. But you just want
to
be the hardest target possible.
You were talking about vegetation, and I read this guy who said don't have big bushes by your front door because people will wait in it and ambush you when you come in. And now whenever I go over to someone's house and I see a bush,
you just weed whack it.
Yeah, that's right. I always get a little nervous, especially when I'm leaving the house. I see a bush. I'm like,
See, well, I thought this was going to be like Dan's like, so I just hide in everyone's bushes to scare my friends,
Well, I saw a ton of videos this past year of, the Ring camera videos people are waiting. A UPS guy or whatever with a fake package, and they open the door, and you got three guys running in.
Yeah, the Ring and all of its competitors are definitely great tools for protecting, but just from us learning, from seeing the attempts that we never knew happened, and how the thieves operate and they scout and plan out everything. To me, that's the real value of those things. Just what we've learned in preparation is amazing through those Ring videos.
Yeah, and honestly, you gotta think about just the mindset of, as you might not be right next to your firearm. Your firearm could be in your bedroom and you're sitting out in the living room and someone's kicking you in your door, and what do you have available? What do you have? You might have a pint glass with water in it. You have something you can pick up, you can throw. What happens if I were to throw a water bottle at your face? Human nature, everyone's going to try to protect themselves. So if you can just do something simple to get them off their game and just give you a second to turn and retreat, or you can continue to attack or whatever you need to do.
Yeah, it goes back to, I can't count the number of instructors who just hammer home the fact that the weapon is between your ears. Anything else is a tool.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if it's a Mark 25, it doesn't matter if it's a glass ashtray, it doesn't matter if it's a pen. That's just the tool. The weapon is right there.
Right. Yeah, and it's we talk about these things with my clients, and most people I train, they're just your average American. They're just obviously seeing what's happening throughout the news. Yeah. San Diego is actually having a ton of break-ins as well. There's a few different organized gangs that are going around doing these home invasions, mainly looking to steal stuff. So they're casing neighborhoods. They're in nice luxury vehicles, so they don't stand out, but they're watching people's schedules. So I will say most of the time they're looking for valuables that they can take with them. They're using the jammers to for alarm systems, they're scaling walls, going in through second stories, so they're pretty sophisticated. But it's happening a lot. So I think just people are just waking up to, unfortunately, it's going to get worse before if it ever does get better. So. Right.
Well, and a lot of those guys, though, it's really target of opportunity. So you'll never make your house Fort Knox without, you know, really ruining your lifestyle. Right. But if you just add a few layers to make it different, like I said, if they have to break something, if it's just not, you left the door unlocked, right. You left your purse in the car, right. you left your laptop on the counter right there by the door. If there's even a little bit of effort required, a lot of times they'll just move on to the next place.
Yeah, exactly.
My neighbor is famous for leaving his garage door open.
Oh, geez.
My wife's like, you should go tell him. Like, the hell with that. They're going to go rob his garage and leave mine alone. mine's closed. His is open. Let him learn.
Well, one thing, too, when I address with clients is, like, do you know your neighbors?
Yeah.
You know, are they an asset? Are they a liability? Are they gun owners?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they have cameras? Like, do they have the camera in front of their house that has a view on yours? Yeah. You know?
Right, right.
So it's good to know, you know, the people you live around. And
sure.
And
yeah. Well, and, you know, it's interesting with you being based in California, you know, over the last few years, we've had such a huge influx in new gun owners nationwide,
right.
But particularly in California. And so, you know, what have you seen? What interesting trends and things have you seen coming out of your clients, you know, based on this new surge of gun owners?
A lot of women.
Okay.
A lot of women gun owners, which is great. A lot of different age groups, too.
Okay.
I mean, I've clients from, I mean, I've trained a family of, you know, husband and wife and their 10-year-old daughter to, you know, a couple in their 70s. So a lot of big age ranges. But I think that in our roster is opening up. So we're starting to get a few more goodies on that we can actually have
sure.
in California.
Yeah. You got the 365. And yeah.
So I would say, like, trend wise, more people are looking for training, which is great, right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be that gun owner that, you know, I love people expressing their Second Amendment rights, but if you don't know how to use the tool, yeah. then you're
a liability.
You're a liability, right?
Who was it just told us yesterday that owning a gun didn't make you a gunfighter? Tom Gresham? So regardless, the statement was that, you know, we love the new people coming in, but it's like, you know, maybe by one gun instead of two and put that other money into training.
Yeah.
So hearing yep. that people are starting to do that, or at least more and more
yeah.
people are
doing
it.
They're awesome. Looking. And
that's fantastic.
There's a good range of instructors in San Diego. I mean, obviously there's a lot of, it's a very big military yeah. town. And
sure.
So a lot of instruction, but at the same time, it's, for me personally, I think trying to teach somebody on a live fire range is not great for novice shooters.
Right.
You're going to have that stress level that's going to be a little high.
Absolutely.
They're going to be so focused on what's going around them and not, you know, it's harder to relay instruction and things mm-hmm. like that. So, you know, everything I do is in the home. And then once we get to a baseline, then we can start moving to live fire stuff once they're familiar with their weapon system and once they're more comfortable with handling it.
I love that system for that reason, but also when you give someone a hammer, suddenly everything looks like a nail. And while the firearm is a great solution when it's necessary, that there's usually about four or five solutions before you get to that point.
Right.
So if you get talk to them in their home, talk through those things earlier, suddenly the firearm becomes where it should be, kind of that last resort choice. Not, hey, I just took a high-speed, low-drag class. I hope someone
yeah,
breaks into my...
Yeah.
Well, and especially in California.
Yes.
You know, I mean, because we know we fight an uphill battle in you know, proving self-defense, you know, anywhere in the country.
Right.
But it's not just an uphill battle in California. You guys are scaling damn near a vertical cliff,
yeah.
you know. And
yeah,
so
that's law's not on our side for sure.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, if it's not, you know, duty to retreat, it's he didn't use gluten-free bullets yeah. or didn't pay his SAG dues. You know, there's a lot of things.
Is,
that could
a,
be,
right,
so.
Is that a soy-based gunpowder yeah. in there? You know?
Well,
cruelty-free
yeah.
primers.
Thankfully enough, California surprisingly does recognize the Castle Doctrine.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
It does. So, you know, at least you have the ability to, you know, you're pretty protected within the home. You know, CCW holders, whole different story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a nightmare of what's happening with, you know, the SB2 that just was released and stuff. But yeah,
and with Castle Doctrine, you know, that doesn't protect you from personal lawsuits.
Correct.
You know.
Correct.
So, but what's different about the way in California is in certain neighborhoods, especially in the Los Angeles area, they're literally castles.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. Hearst Castle.
Yep.
So why did you stay in California instead of from New Hampshire?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Have you ever wintered in New Hampshire?
Yeah. what was funny is, like, I was getting out of the military. My mom was like, oh, you're going to move back home, right? And I was like, oh, I don't think so. It was hard to leave. You know, I love San Diego. you take away the politics, and it's such a beautiful state. But yeah. San Diego is a great city. We're in North County, so you know we're away from you know San Diego proper, and it's a nice neighborhood. The kids are actually outside playing, and it's great.
There's a reason so many conventions go to San Diego. I mean, mm-hmm. And I forget the comedian, but he said the hardest job or the easiest job in the world is weatherman in San Diego.
Yep.
Today, nice and beautiful. Tomorrow, nice and beautiful. Next week, nice and beautiful.
Oh, we got crazy floods this week. I don't know if you guys saw any of that.
No.
So the last 2 days, a lot of parts of San Diego are underwater. I mean, some serious flooding going on. I didn't miss New England winters, really.
I hear that.
And it's tough because, you know, I only get to see my family every so often. But my wife now, she's from San Diego, and so I mean they've adopted me into their family. But it was a hard place to leave. Mm-hmm. And personally, I would honestly say I think California is overall a red state, mm-hmm. and San Diego especially. It's a pretty decent conservative area.
It's like Illinois once you get out of Chicago, or anything else.
Michigan outside of Detroit, yep. You know.
Well, and now with the work you do with your other group, that also being there probably keeps you in contact with the community a little bit more and the teams a little bit more too. So
you'd be surprised.
Not so much?
Yeah, no not too much. I think there's maybe like one or two guys that I still talk to. Again, it's just been so long. Yeah, it's been now like coming up on, 13 years of being out of service, and then a lot of people do, you know, go back to their home states, and over time, you know, I've met a lot of team guys outside that I've met just doing mm-hmm. you know other you know veteran stuff. So I've met a lot of guys.
I met 15 of them at the bar last night that were all Delta Force Recon snipers. You know, they were telling every girl that would slow down now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we've got some people walking by outside our booth, and we've got a little sign that says Navy SEAL, and it's interesting to watch everyone scan the three of us, and they're like, nope, nope, nope. But, yeah, a couple drinks in us, and then all of a sudden everyone's kind of high speed in some regard or another.
No, I'm never high speed.
Well, the whole tactical industry, it's so cutthroat when we're all in this together. You know, it should be a community where everyone is trying to work towards that common goal, but so many people are just stepping on one another. It's tough, but I mean, that's why, like, with my business, I stay in my place. You know, it's myself. I work alone. I have no employees. I'm my own boss, and so it's just a lot easier to manage.
Absolutely.
And again, not being in that whole like live fire trainer scenario, kind of puts you in a different category.
Well, I have to say, as somebody who's worked with companies that worked in the personal defense space for like 15 years, I need you to franchise your model, because it sounds so much better than what
right.
a lot
I,
of these
I had never heard
doing.
I was very surprised that it wasn't being done. And
it's so smart.
Find the hole, right?
I've never heard of anyone doing that. That's really clever.
And it's so smart. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you're all it'd be super, completely 100% safe training tools. You know, you're using blowback air pistols with, you know, laser barrels. You have interactive targets, so it's fun as well. So you're learning in your house. It's fun. It's engaging, but you don't have that.
So are
that
you work. The bad guy, or do you do so? Do you scenarios? What do you do if a Navy SEAL breaks into your house?
So right, you'd be ready for anything at that point,
right?
So I will say that I do a force-on-force element as well. Mm-hmm. It's harder because, you know, we got to find the location to do it, and things like that. And then it's expensive to rent out facilities. And but the force-on-force element is so
beneficial.
It's the hands down the best form of training. So back in 2014, I started working for a CQB company where it was strictly force-on-force training. And we were training 3 to 4 hours a day, 4 days a week for years. It was the most consistent training I've ever had. I learned a lot of things I was never taught in the teams that I do now, that I teach to my clients as well. But it's the most beneficial training. If you can get into that element where you're actually being shot at, right? You can't train to be a gunfighter unless you're in a gunfight. And so, and then what you do is you videotape it, right? You film it. You go back. People in their heads think they look a whole lot more tactical than they really
are. Sure, absolutely.
But over time, you know, when you're getting shot at consistently, or if you're, you know, your body position is always in the wrong position, your legs are continuously getting shot, you're going to self-correct, right?
Yeah.
The pain retains, so you're going to self-correct. But
legs, yeah.
There's not a lot of places to do it out in San Diego, so it's I'm fortunate enough to have a decent amount of contacts with facilities, but it's not the most cheapest option to go.
We did a force-on-force event when I was working with Black Hawk, and I forget Federal's version of that. It's not simunition, but whatever that was. And I had a pack of gun riders. About half of them were former either military or law enforcement, and we got them into the force-on-force room, and it was just – it was really telling watching some of these guys that, again, a 25-year cop before he became a gun rider, but never got out of the square range training,
right.
Got eaten alive in that. And we may have played some tricks, like giving the bad guy a staple gun at one point. And I'm waiting for it. I know what's happening. I hear him getting to that third room, and I hear, drop it, tech, tech, tech. Shit! Because they just mowed him. Even people who've been heavily trained, if they don't do that kind of training, it's a whole new experience.
I mean, you see all these videos of these tier one high speed guys doing the movements look fantastic, right?
Right.
I mean, they're on point, but when you're shooting at paper targets that aren't shooting back, Mike Tyson said it best,
yep.
Where you can everyone's have
got
a plan until
yeah.
you get punched in the face, yeah. And that is the exact same concept.
Well,
so,
we had Larry Zanoff on earlier, and he was talking about fight choreography, and that's kind of what that turns out to be.
Yeah, it's sparring. I mean, it's
sure.
really what it is.
Yeah, because we started doing, the SIG Academy has their ConX City out on there where you're doing the simulation stuff in there, and it was... We wrecked a couple of minivans in an event doing it that way, but it's everything that you think of as the flow going into it just completely falls apart when suddenly you're, because it never fails. The instructors always go for the thighs. because that hurts.
Yeah, it does.
And after about the sixth time you get zapped on the inner thigh, you're like, I know who I'm shooting first next time.
Well, before we run out of time, Logan teased something earlier that I want to get into a little bit.
Okay.
Do you want to introduce it?
I'm going to deer in the headlights, Dan. I've been filming so many episodes, I don't remember.
I think I know what Dan's talking about, and I think it's the time Perry saved us from the robot alien invasion.
Oh.
Yeah, the deployment to Cybertron.
Yes. How did that happen?
All right, so try to keep it brief, but there's tons of military guys in Hollywood, right,
sure.
consulting, and so what a... Michael Bay's top consultants was his old Vietnam era SEAL who's been working with him for decades, and so they're always using the same guys in their movies. And so for this was Transformers 5, and they were specifically looking for a younger group of guys because we played active duty SEALs in the movie, right?
Sure.
So we were just playing ourselves. It was great, super easy. But I was at an event one year. With my church, actually. It was like this big men's conference, and I ran into one of my old buds instructors, and he had been working on these films for a while, and so he was like, hey, let me connect you, and it kind of just went from there. And so we ended up going out to Troy, Michigan, where we were filming in studio for 6 weeks, and then we ended up flying out to London for a couple weeks. We filmed this really cool shot out in Wales. It was awesome time, but
Troy, Michigan to Wales.
Yeah,
having been to Troy, Michigan,
I look at our resident Michigander here. So,
but I will say the perks were better here, like with craft services. Like your
meal,
it was the best part.
So
of filming
So much
meals.
Less intestine and stomach in the meals here than Wales. Yeah.
So is that something you want to do more of, or are you I've had that experience?
No, I mean I would love to. But again, it's another one of those industries that's so competitive.
Yes.
Sure.
Even though there's tons of work out there, it's like you're getting into my space.
Yeah.
And, so it's challenging for sure. I would love to. I mean, I don't think my wife would be thrilled, again, with me being on for 9 weeks of filming. We have a newborn at home. So,
congrats.
So, thank you. So she's got the two dogs and the baby. And but, I mean, the experience was phenomenal.
I
it was
bet.
Just such a good time. And I did get a line. So, I still get royalties today, which
line?
Is great. It was we're in the back of this Osprey that's, being chased by whatever. And we see another one blow up, and so I turn to Josh Duhamel's character, and I'm like, sir, bird 3 just went down. And I'm sitting at the edge, the door's open.
That's a good line.
But that alone,
that's
that was
a good line.
Now, did you try to play tech advisor and go, Mike, that's not what a SEAL would say. I'd, there'd be a lot more. I know we got a rating on this movie, but that's not what I would say. Did you just go, sir, yes,
yeah,
sir.
Oh, yeah. You just, whatever you want me to say, I'll say. I will say this, though, is you do get a better – respect for the films to where, you know, being a veteran or being gun guys, you're like, oh, like, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't, we wouldn't do that. And you know that there's actual operators on these movies consulting, right. But being on the other end, it's like, okay, like, it doesn't matter what you say. They're like, no, this doesn't look good on camera. Right. We're doing it this way.
It's,
and it's like,
all right, we're not,
I get it.
We're not paying Josh what we're paying him to cover him up with the buttstock. So yeah. He's going to shoot low.
Yeah. It was funny with all the team guys on set. It's just, it was a fight for seeing where the cameras are and trying to get the best placement.
You're trying to tell me SEALs are competitive?
Just that one instance.
Really?
It was really out of character.
It was a one-off, yeah. That's funny. Well, as a one-off, we are off our schedule, out of time, but we really appreciate you. Yes, absolutely.
No, thank you, guys.
We appreciate you, Perry, coming and spending some time and chatting with us and
my
giving
pleasure.
Us some insight to all of that. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. I hope we can do it again.
Hey, and if we want to hire your services to come check out our house in California, where do we find
you? Yes, so the company is Fortified Measures. Okay. So you can go to fortifiedmeasures.com. I do love to travel. So, you know, if people can't come to San Diego, you know, I love doing training out of state. I also just started a YouTube channel, which I'm doing like gear stuff and training. So hopefully we'll be at least putting up some home defense tips for people who can just like go online and check that out.
Very thanks, cool. Barry.
All right. Thanks, thank you guys. All right. Well, that's it for us on this episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. Really appreciate you tuning in and joining us. Make sure you're subscribed on your favorite platform. Give us some likes. Leave us some comments. We do read and respond to the comments. We appreciate all the feedback. We hope you guys enjoyed consuming this episode as much as we enjoyed making it, because without you, there is no us. So that's it for us today, and we will see you right here again on the next episode of the No Low Ballers podcast.